Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of The World of Percy Jackson. In this episode, we're going to read chapters 51 to 52, when in the previous episode, we read chapters 49 to 50, in which the demigods of Jason and his group were surrounded by monsters, and without knowing what to do, the gods had come to help. And this included almost everyone's godly parents, and even if some of the demigods and their parents didn't show up, they had help, such as Hazel, who had Hecate to come out and help. So with that being said, we left off on Zeus using his winds to push the Argo II one final push to help out against fighting against Gaia. So now we're going to read chapter 51, Jason. So much for a tender farewell. The last Jason saw of his dad, Zeus, was 100 feet tall. Holding the Argo II by its prow, he boomed, "Hold on!" Then he tossed the ship up and spiked it overhand like a volleyball. If Jason hadn't been strapped to the mast with one of Leo's 20-point safety harnesses, he would have disintegrated. As it was, his stomach tried to stay behind in Greece and all the air was sucked out of his lungs. The sky turned black, the ship rattled and creaked, the deck cracked like thin ice under Jason's legs, and with a sonic boom, the Argo II hurtled out of the clouds.
"Jason!"
Leo shouted. "Hurry!" His fingers felt like melted plastic, but Jason managed to undo the straps. Leo was lashed to the control console, desperately trying to right the ship as they spiraled downward in freefall. The sails were on fire, Festus creaked in alarm, a catapult peeled away and lifted into the air. Centrifugal force sent the shields flying off the railings like metal frisbees. Wider cracks opened in the deck as Jason staggered toward the hold, using the winds to keep himself anchored. If he couldn't make it to the others... Then the hatch burst open. Frank and Hazel stumbled through, pulling on the guide rope they'd attached to the mast. Piper, Annabeth, and Percy followed, all of them looking disoriented.
"Go!"
Leo yelled.
"Go, go, go!"
For once, Leo's tone was deadly serious. They talked through their evacuation plan, but that slap across the world had made Jason's mind sluggish. Judging from the others' expressions, they weren't in much better shape. Buford the table saved them. He clattered across the deck with his holographic hedge blaring,
"Let's go! Move it! Cut that out!"
Then his tabletop split into helicopter blades and Buford buzzed away. Frank changed form. Instead of a dazed demigod, he was now a dazed gray dragon. Hazel climbed onto his neck. Frank grabbed Percy and Annabeth in his front claws, then spread his wings and soared away. Jason held Piper by the waist, ready to fly, but he made the mistake of glancing down. The view was a spinning kaleidoscope of sky, earth, sky, earth. The ground was getting awfully close.
"Leo, you won't make it!" Jason shouted. "Come with us!"
"No! Get out of here!"
"Leo!" Piper tried. "Please!"
"Save your charms, Big Pipes! I told you, I've got a plan! Now shoo!"
Jason took a last look at the splintering ship. The Argo II had been their home for so long, now they were abandoning it for good, and leaving Leo behind. Jason hated it, but he saw the determination in Leo's eyes. Just like the visit with his father, Zeus, there was no time for a proper goodbye. Jason harnessed the winds, and he and Piper shot into the sky. The ground wasn't much less chaotic. As they plummeted down, Jason saw a vast army of monsters spread across the hills. Cynocephali. Two-headed men, wild centaurs, ogres, and others he couldn't even name. Surrounding two islands of demigods at the crest of Half-Blood Hill, gathered at the feet of the Athena Parthenos, was the main force of Camp Half-Blood, along with the first and fifth cohorts, rallied around the golden eagle of the Legion. The other three Roman cohorts were in a defensive formation several hundred yards away and seemed to be taking the brunt of the attack. Giant eagles circled Jason, screeching urgently as if looking for orders. Frank the Grey Dragon flew alongside with his passengers.
"Hazel!" Jason yelled. "Those three cohorts are in trouble. If they don't merge with the rest of the demigods..."
"On it!" Hazel said. "Go, Frank!"
Dragon Frank veered to the left with Annabeth in one claw yelling,
"Let's get him!"
And Percy in the other claw screaming,
"I hate flying!"
Piper and Jason veered right toward the summit of Half-Blood Hill. Jason's heart lifted when he saw Nico D'Angelo on the front lines with the Greeks, slashing his way through a crowd of two-headed men. A few feet away, Rhaena sat astride a new Pegasus, her sword drawn. She shouted orders at the Legion, and the Romans obeyed without question as if she had never been away. Jason didn't see Octavian anywhere,
Good. Neither did he see a colossal Earth goddess laying waste to the world. Very good. Perhaps Gaia had risen, taken one look at the modern world, and decided to go back to sleep. Jason wished they could be that lucky, but he doubted it. He and Piper landed on the hill, their swords drawn, and a cheer went up from the Greeks and the Romans.
About time, Raina called. Glad you could join us.
With a start, Jason realized she was addressing Piper, not him. Piper grinned.
We had some giants to kill.
Excellent,
Raina returned with a smile.
Help yourself to some barbarians.
Why, thank you.
The two girls launched into battle side by side. Nico nodded to Jason as if they'd just seen each other 5 minutes ago, then went back to turning two-headed men into no-headed corpses.
Good timing. Where's the ship?
Jason pointed. The Arc of the Second streaked across the sky in a ball of fire, shedding burning chunks of mast, hull, and armament. Jason didn't see how even fireproof Leo could survive in that inferno, but he had to hope.
Gods, Nico said. Is everyone okay?
Leo.
Jason's voice broke.
He said that he had a plan.
The comet disappeared behind the western hills. Jason waited with dread for the sound of an explosion, but he heard nothing over the roar of battle. Nico met his eyes.
He'll be fine.
Sure, but just in case. For Leo. For Leo, Jason agreed. They charged into the fight. Jason's anger gave him renewed strength. The Greeks and Romans slowly pushed back the enemies. Wild centaurs toppled. Wolf-headed men howled as they were cut to ashes. More monsters kept appearing. Carpoi grain spirits swirling out of the grass. Griffins diving from the sky. Lumpy clay humanoids that made Jason think of evil Plato men.
They're ghosts with earthen shells, Nico warned. Don't let them hit you.
Obviously, Gaia had kept some surprises in reserve. At one point, Will Solis, the lead camper for Apollo, ran up to Nico and said something in his ear. Over the yelling and clashing of blades, Jason couldn't hear the words.
Jason, I have to go, Nico said.
Jason didn't really understand, but he nodded, and Will and Nico dashed off into the fray. A moment later, a squad of Hermes campers gathered around Jason for no apparent reason. Connor Stoll grinned.
What's up, Grace?
I'm good, Jason said. You? Connor dodged an ogre club and stabbed a grain spirit, which exploded in a cloud of wheat.
Yeah, can't complain. Nice day for it.
Raina yelled,
Iaculare Flammas!
And a wave of flaming arrows arced over the legion's shield wall, destroying a platoon of ogres. The Roman ranks moved forward, impaling centaurs and trampling wounded ogres under their bronze-tipped boots. Somewhere downhill, Jason heard Frank yell in Latin,
Repellare! Equitus!
A massive herd of centaurs parted in a panic as the legion's other three cohorts plowed through in perfect formation, their spears bright with monster blood. Frank marched before them, on the left flank riding Arian. Hazel beamed with pride.
Ave, Praetor Zhang!
Raina called.
Ave, Praetor Ramirez Ariano!
Frank said.
Let's do this! Legion, close ranks!
A cheer went up among the Romans as the five cohorts melded into one massive killing machine. Frank pointed his sword forward, and from the Golden Eagle standards, tendrils of lightning swept across the enemy, turning several hundred monsters to toast.
Legion! Cunam formate!
Raina yelled.
Advance!
Another riot cheer on Jason's right as Percy and Annabeth reunited with the forces of Camp Half-Blood.
Greeks! Percy yelled. Let's... Fight stuff!
They yelled like banshees and charged. Jason grinned. He loved the Greeks. They had no organization whatsoever, but they made up for it with enthusiasm. Jason was feeling good about the battle, except for two big questions. Where was Leo? And where was Gaia? Unfortunately, he got the second answer first. Under his feet, the earth rippled as Half-Blood Hill had become a giant water mattress. Demigods fell, ogres slipped, centaurs charged face first into the grass.
Awake!
A voice boomed all around them. 100 yards away, at the crest of the next hill, the grass and dirt swirled upward like a massive drill. The column of earth thickened into the 20-foot tall figure of a woman, her dress woven from blades of grass, her skin as white as quartz, her hair brown and tangled like tree roots.
Little fools!
Gaia, the Earth Mother, opened her pure green eyes.
The paltry magic of your statue cannot contain me.
As she said it, Jason realized why Gaia hadn't appeared until now. The Athena Parthenos had been protecting the demigods, holding back the wrath of the Earth. But even Athena's might could only last so long against a primordial goddess. Fear as palpable as a cold front washed over the demigod army.
"Stand fast!" Piper shouted, her charm speak clear and loud. "Greeks and Romans, we can fight her together!"
Gaia laughed. She spread her arms and the earth bent toward her, trees tilting, bedrock groaning, soil rippling in waves. Jason rode on the wind, but all around him, monsters and demigods alike started to sink into the ground. One of Octavian's onagers capsized and disappeared into the side of the hill.
"The whole earth is my body," Gaia boomed. "How would you fight the goddess of Foomp?"
In a flash of bronze, Gaia was swept off the hillside, snarled in the claws of a 50-ton metal dragon. Festus, reborn, rose into the sky on a gleaming wings, spewing fire from his maw triumphantly. As he ascended, the rider on his back got smaller and more difficult to discern, but Leo's grin was unmistakable.
"Pipes! Jason!" he shouted down. "You coming? The fight is up here!"
And that concludes our end of chapter 51. I gotta say, gotta hand it to Leo for even managing to be the comedic relief, even in a dire situation like this. But other than that, it's amazing to see that the Greeks and the Romans have finally come together. It's crazy to think how you wonder what Octavian had said to the Romans to make them so against the Greeks, and how he used the opportunity of the Argo II shooting Balliste onto the Roman camp, and he completely switched that onto his side, and now he's nowhere to be seen. So I think it's just really fascinating how one thing could suddenly become a moment of opportunity, and the next thing you know, you start abandoning that opportunity the moment you hit difficulty, which is what Octavian exactly did. So, after the break, we will read chapter 52 and see how exactly is Festus going to be a superpower against fighting against Gaia and her monster army. So, after the break, we will read chapter 52 and see you after the break.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And we're back from the break, and now we're going to read chapter 52, Jason. As soon as Gaia achieved liftoff, the ground solidified. Demigods stopped sinking, though many were still buried up to their waists. Sadly, the monsters seemed to be digging themselves out more quickly. They charged the Greek and Roman ranks, taking advantage of the demigods' disorganization. Jason put his arms around Piper's waist. He was about to take off when Percy yelled, "Wait! Frank can fly the rest of us up there. We can all..." "No, man," Jason said. "They need you here. There's still an army to defeat. Besides, the prophecy..." "He's right," Frank gripped Percy's arm. "You have to let them do this, Percy. It's like Annabeth's quest in Rome, or Hazel at the doors of death. This part can only be them." Percy obviously didn't like it, but at that moment, a flood of monsters swept over the Greek forces. Annabeth called to him, "Hey! Problem over here!" Percy ran to join her. Frank and Hazel turned to Jason. They raised their arms in the Roman salute, then ran off to regroup the legion. Jason and Piper spiraled upward on the wind. "I've got the cure," Piper murmured like a chant. "It'll be fine. I've got the cure." Jason realized she'd lost her sword somehow during the battle, but he doubted it would matter. Against Gaia, a sword would do no good. This was about storm and fire and a third power, Piper's charm speak, which would hold them together. Last winter, Piper had slowed the power of Gaia at the Wolf House, helping to free Hera from a cage of Earth. Now she would have an even bigger job.
As they ascended, Jason gathered the wind and clouds around him. The sky responded with frightening speed. Soon they were in the eye of a maelstrom. Lightning burned his eyes. Thunder made his teeth vibrate. Directly above them, Festus grappled the Earth Goddess. Gaia kept disintegrating, trying to trickle back to the ground, but the winds kept her aloft. Festus sprayed her with flames, which spray it seemed to force her into solid form. Meanwhile, from Festus's back, Leo blasted the goddess with flames of his own and hurled insults.
Potty sludge! Dirt face! This is for my mother, Esperanza Valdez!
His whole body was wreathed in fire. Rain hung in the stormy air, but only sizzled and steamed around him. Jason zoomed around toward them. Gaia turned into loose white sand, but Jason summoned a squadron of Venti who churned around her, constraining her in a cocoon of wind. Gaia fought back. When she wasn't disintegrating, she lashed out with shrapnel blasts of stone and soil that Jason barely deflected, stoking the storm, containing Gaia, keeping himself and Piper aloft. Jason had never done anything so difficult. He felt like he was covered in lead weights, trying to swim with only his legs while holding a car over his head. But he had to keep Gaia off the ground. That was the secret Kim had hinted at when they spoke at the bottom of the sea. Long ago, Uranos, the sky god, had been tricked down to the earth by Gaia and the Titans. They'd held him onto the ground so he couldn't escape, and with his powers weakened from being so far from his home territory, they'd been able to cut him apart. Now Jason, Leo, and Piper had to reverse that scenario. They had to keep Gaia away from her source of power, the Earth, and weaken her until she could be defeated. Together they rose. Festus creaked and groaned with effort, but he continued to gain altitude. Jason still didn't understand how Leo had managed to remake the dragon. Then he recalled all the hours Leo had spent working inside the hull over the last few weeks. Leo must have been planning this all along and building a new body for Festus within the framework of the ship. He must have known that in his gut that the Argo II would eventually fall apart, a ship turning into a dragon. Jason supposed it was no more amazing than the dragon turning into a suitcase back in Quebec. However, it had happened. Jason was elated to see their old friend in action once more.
You cannot defeat me!
Gaia crumbled to sand, only to get blasted by more flames. Her body melted into a lump of glass, shattered, then reformed again as human.
I am eternal!
Eternally annoying! Leo yelled and urged Festus higher. Jason and Piper rose with them.
Get me closer, Piper urged. I need to be next to her.
Piper, the flames and the shrapnel.
I know!
Jason moved in until they were right next to Gaia. The winds encased the goddess, keeping her solid, but it was all Jason could do to contain her blasts of sand and soil. Her eyes were solid green, like all nature had been condensed into a few spoonfuls of organic matter.
Foolish children!
Her face contorted with miniature earthquakes and mudslides.
You are so weary,
Piper told the goddess, her voice radiating kindness and sympathy.
Eons of pain and disappointment weigh on you.
Silence!
The force of Gaia's anger was so great, Jason momentarily lost control of the wind. He would have dropped into freefall, but Festus caught him and Piper in his other huge claw. Amazingly, Piper kept her focus.
Millennia of sorrow, she told Gaia. Your husband, Uranos, was abusive. Your grandchildren, the gods, overthrew your beloved children, the Titans. Your other children, the Cyclops and the Hundred-Handed Ones, were thrown into Tartarus. You are so tired of heartache.
Lies!
Gaia crumbled into a tornado of soil and grass, but her essence seemed to churn more sluggishly. If they gained any more altitude, the air would be too thin to breathe. Jason would be too weak to control it. Piper's talk of exhaustion affected him too, sapping his strength, making his body feel heavy.
What you want, Piper continued, more than victory, more than revenge, you want rest. You are so weary, so incomprehensibly tired of the ungrateful mortals and immortals.
You do not speak for me! You cannot!
You want one thing,
Piper said soothingly, her voice resonating through Jason's bones. One word. You want permission to close your eyes and forget your troubles.
You want sleep.
Gaia solidified into human form. Her head lolled, her eyes closed, and she went limp in Festus's claw. Unfortunately, Jason started to black out. The wind was dying, the storm dissipated, dark spots danced in his eyes.
Leo! Piper gasped for breath. We only have a few seconds. My charm speak won't...
I know!
Leo looked like he was made of fire. Flames rippled beneath his skin, illuminating his skull. Festus steamed and glowed, his claws burning through Jason's shirt. I can't contain the fire much longer. I'll vaporize her, don't worry, but you guys need to leave. No, Jason said. We have to stay with you. Piper's got the cure. Leo, you can't... Hey, Leo grinned, which was unnerving in the flames, his teeth like molten silver ingots. I told you. I had a plan. When are you going to trust me? And by the way, I love you guys. Festus' claw opened and Jason and Piper fell. Jason had no strength to stop it. He held on to Piper as he cried Leo's name and they plummeted earthward. Festus became an indistinct ball of fire in the sky, a second sun, growing smaller and hotter. Then in the corner of Jason's eye, a blazing comet streaked upward from the ground with a high-pitched, almost human scream just before Jason blacked out. The comet intercepted the ball of fire above them. The explosion turned the entire sky gold. And that concludes the end of chapter 52. What an amazing chapter. I mean, the sheer planning and just the flawlessness of this. But somehow I just don't... I have a feeling that I don't think that Gaia is going to sleep eternally this quickly. After all the work that she had put in just to wake up, I don't think that she's going to go to sleep this quickly. As pessimistic as that may sound. But of course there's always hope for this to end as soon as it can. So next week we will continue by seeing what exactly happened to Gaia and whether she would have been defeated. What exactly will happen? We'll have to see next week as we read chapters 53 to 54. But until next week, and just like that, I had forgotten one of our most important sessions, the Q&A session. So, once again, let me explain some of the things about the Q&A session before we get into it. Number one, if I skip your question, do please let me know and I'll try my best to get you in the next episode. Additionally, sometimes I do skip questions because I'm unable to answer them at the moment. And that isn't to discourage anyone from asking questions. Please be as curious as you can. But sometimes I will, I do feel a little uncomfortable trying to answer questions. So hopefully you all can understand me because of that. So without further ado, let's move on to the questions. Number one, what should we call you other than the podcaster? Other than right now, I don't really have another nickname you could call me, but I will keep brainstorming, trying to find probably easier names than constantly saying the podcaster. But stay tuned for that. I will definitely be trying to update you, everyone, on anything I have when it comes to changing the podcaster to anything else. Because believe me, I do understand that the podcaster is also a bit too long, but I will try my best to try and find a new name that hopefully is a lot easier to say. Next question. Favorite monster throughout the series? Probably going to be Domicin. Domicin, for sure. At first, he seemed like a monster who was just shunned off and didn't really want to interact with anybody. But after a while, he seemed someone who was simply caring. Someone who cared about the demigods in a way that other monsters, I didn't really see that. And I think that really made it a lot more endearing to see. And it definitely made me a lot more appreciative that there are monsters out there that don't necessarily think of the bad when they look at demigods, including Bob as well, most definitely. But I think that it's definitely monsters like those just definitely make you feel that there's some hope.
even in Tartarus. Next question is, who would be your best friend, significant other, and worst enemy at each camp? Best friend, I'd probably have to say Percy or Leo, just because of their comedic, again, comedic relief is all I go for. It seems to be a recurring motif, but I think I would love to be friends with, all of the seven demigods, including Nico and Reyna and Coach Hedge. But if I had to pick and choose, I'd probably go for the comedic reliefs. The ones who I think that, they definitely are the most optimistic when it comes to a lot of situations. And I think that I really appreciate that about them. Significant others would probably be, I'd probably have to say either maybe Annabeth or Reyna, for sure. Worst enemy, easily Octavian or Drew. Those are hands down two of some of the worst demigods I've ever seen in all of this, in both series combined. Next question. If Percy accepted immortality, do you think Gaia would have still have risen? Now, here's the fascinating part. I think that the reason that Percy rejected the offer was already all played out. The prophecy was I don't think the prophecy would have been made, because if Percy would have accepted it, I think that definitely Gaia, I think Gaia still would have woken up. Because Gaia woke up because of what Hazel had ended up doing during her first time being alive. And because of that, that had begun to woke Gaia up. So I think that Gaia would have inevitably been woken up no matter what. It's just Percy now would have been a god instead had he accepted that offer. So he could have also played a part in the part of the prophecy where the gods and the demigods will help each other to defeat Gaia. But other than that, I think that everything would have inevitably happened no matter what. Next question is, what would you do if Jason or Leo died? It's inevitable, because whatever happens in the prophecy happens, and there's no way of avoiding it. But to say the least, I think that it definitely will be a very heart-wrenching moment, because these two have been such great inspiration to demigods and just people reading this book. I mean, the way that Leo was able to use the worst of situations and turn it into the best possibilities, and the way Jason was able to make sacrifices and still become an influential leader despite not having that official title, really putting truth to the saying that not all heroes wear capes. I mean, these two have just been magnificent demigods, but also people of character. And I think that it would definitely be a very, very upsetting moment if either of these were to die. And it is unfortunately inevitable that it will happen. Next question. What do you think the first interaction between Clarice and Frank would be like? Most likely, I think that Clarice would be definitely outgoing. And I think that Frank would be, I think he would be intimidated at first, because I think that he would have what Percy had felt when he first saw Clarice, intimidated. But I think that the more you get to know Clarice, the more you get to see that she's more of the person where she's rough on the outside, but nice and kind and caring about others on the inside. I mean, the experiences that we remember with her and Selena Beauregard just shows that Clarice may seem as this person who's just really rude and doesn't really care about anybody, but on the inside, once you get to know her, she's someone that does really care about the demigods at camp and the people that she's in charge of as camp counselor. And I think that that's very endearing to see, as a matter of fact. Next question is, least favorite Titan. It would probably would the cheerleaders count as Titans? I think their name were Empusai, I believe. Most likely, they would probably be my least favorite Titan. Probably because they also trash-talked a lot, and I think that they were both an inconvenience to Percy, both talking-wise and fighting-wise. So I'll definitely say that for sure. Or any demigod that went against them in general. Next question. Favorite god other than Hypnos and Demeter? Would probably have to say third on that pyramid would probably be probably Athena. Great parent? Probably not. But in terms of god, goddess, so my bad. But in terms of being a goddess, and I think that she's definitely she's one of the top ones up on the pyramid. Next question is favorite couple other than Percy and Annabeth. Most likely Leo and Calypso. I mean, their banter is just amazing to hear, and it's really funny. Despite the limited time that they had on Calypso's island, Ogygia, they still made it all worthwhile. And you could really tell that they're meant for each other. I'll definitely say that, at least. Next question is, favorite mythological creature? Probably have to say Pegasi. I think that they're just really fascinating creatures. Being a horse that can also fly, really cool in my opinion. Next question is, if one of the big three gods had to kill one of their children, who do you think would do it and how? Ooh. I'm going to be honest, I think it might be Zeus. And I most likely he would probably get one of his minions to do it. Because then technically it wouldn't directly be from him. But most likely it would be Zeus. I think that Zeus is someone that if he has to... He's someone who puts duty over family. And even if these demigods are direct children of his, I feel that he wouldn't mind sacrificing a few, which is really unfortunate, but it feels that he probably wouldn't mind. So yeah. Next question is weakest demigod of all time. I don't really think. I think that every demigod is strong in their own pursuit. I think that there's not really a weak demigod, unless we're counting Octavian in this. I'd say that's pretty weak. But I feel like a lot of demigods, except Octavian, they seem to have something that is of a very strong trait that is part of their identity. And sometimes that has to do with their personality, and sometimes that has to do with their abilities that they've gotten. And sometimes it's both. And I think that that's the beauty of what demigods are. Is not only their resilience, but the uniqueness that they bring to the table, each and every one of them. That they're not just seen as demigods, but they're seen as people. And they highlight that through every single book of this. Through every single book in general. Next question is, would you rather have Percy or Jason as a friend? I would love to have both of them as friends. I think that they're just amazing people. And I would love to befriend any of the demigods, because they're an inspiration, all of the demigods, and I think that they're something that should be taken as an aspiration, a goal for perseverance and dedication. And that concludes our Q&A session for this episode. Once again, if I've missed your question, do please let me know, and I'll try my best to get to you in the next chapter, in the next episode. But other than that, until next week, stay safe and stay out of boredom. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of The World of Percy Jackson. In this episode, we're going to read chapters 53 to 54, and in the previous episode, we read chapters 51 to 52, in which we witnessed a heroic sacrifice made by Leo.
As Festus was blowing up in the air, Leo had told Jason that he has got a plan. Is his plan to sacrifice himself in for the prophecy, or could it be that he actually does have a plan? We were left on a cliffhanger, and it looks like we won't be getting that answer in this episode, because we will now be reading chapters 53 and 54 from Nico's perspective. So, without further ado, let's see how it is looking from down below on the battleground. So, chapter 53, Nico. Nico had witnessed many forms of death. He didn't think anything could surprise him anymore. He was wrong. In the middle of the battle, Will Solis ran up to him and said one word in his ear. Octavian. That got Nico's full attention. He had hesitated when he'd had the chance to kill Octavian, but there was no way Nico would let that scumbag ogre escape justice. Where? Come on, Will said. Hurry! Nico turned to Jason, who was fighting next to him. Jason, I have to go. Then he plunged into the chaos, following Will. They passed Tyson and his Cyclops, who were bellowing, Bad dog! Bad dog! As they passed the heads of the Cynophilus-Cephali. Grover Underwood and a team of satyrs danced around with their panpipes, playing harmonies so dissonant that the earthen-shelled ghosts cracked apart. Travis Stoll ran past, arguing with his brother, What do you mean we set the landmines on the wrong hill? Nico and Will were halfway down the hill when the ground trembled under their feet. Like everyone else, monster and demigod alike, they froze in horror and watched as the whirling column of earth erupted from the top of the next hill, and Gaia appeared in all her glory. Then something large and bronze swooped out of the sky. Thump. Festus the bronze dragon snatched up the Earth Mother and soared away with her. What? How? Nico stammered. I don't know, Will said. But I doubt there's much we can do about that. We have other problems. Will sprinted towards the nearest Onager. As they got closer, Nico spotted Octavian furiously readjusting the machine's targeting levers. The throwing arm was already printed with a full payload of Imperial gold and explosives. The ogre rushed out, tripping over gears and anchor spikes, fumbling with the ropes. Every so often, he glanced up at Festus the dragon. Octavian! Nico yelled. The ogre spun, then backed up against the huge sphere of ammunition. His fine purple robe snagged on the trigger rope, but Octavian didn't notice. Fumes from the payload curled about him as if drawn to the Imperial gold jewelry around his arms and neck. The golden wreath in his hair. Ha ha! Oh, I see! Octavian's laughter was brittle and quite insane. Trying to steal my glory, eh? No, son of Pluto. I am the savior of Rome. I was promised! Will raised his hands in a placating gesture. Octavian, get away from the Onager. That isn't safe. Of course it's not! I will shoot Gaia down with this machine! Out of the corner of his eye, Nico saw Jason Grace rocket into the sky with Piper in his arms, flying straight towards Festus. Around the son of Jupiter, storm clouds gathered, swirling into a hurricane. Thunder boomed. You see? Octavian cried. The gold on his body was definitely smoking now, attracted to the catapult's payload like iron to a giant magnet. The gods approve of my actions! Jason is making that storm. Nico said, if you fire the Onager, you'll kill him, and Piper, and... Good! Octavian yelled. They're traitors! All traitors! Listen to me, Will tried again. This is not what Apollo would want. Besides, your robes are... You know nothing, Gracchus! Octavian wrapped his hand around the release level. I must act before they get any higher. Only an Onager such as this can make the shot. I will single-handedly... Centurion, said a voice behind him. From the back of the siege engine, Michael Cahale appeared. He had a large red knot on his forehead where Tyson had bonked him unconscious. He stumbled as he walked, but somehow he had found his way here from the shore, and along the way he'd picked up a sword and shield. Michael! Octavian shrieked with glee. Excellent! Guard me while I fire this Onager. Then we will kill these great guy together. Michael Cahale took on the scene, his boss's ropes tangled in the trigger rope, Octavian's jewelry fuming from proximity to the Imperial gold ammunition. He glanced up at the dragon, now high in the air, surrounded by rings of storm clouds like the circles of an archery target.
Then he scowled at Nico.
Nico readied his own sword. Surely Michael Kahale would warn his leader to step away from the Onager. Surely he would attack.
"Are you certain, Octavian?" asked the son of Venus.
"Yes!"
"Are you absolutely certain?"
"Yes, you fool! I'll be remembered as the savior of Rome! Now keep them away while I destroy Gaia."
"Octavian, don't," Will pleaded. "We can't allow you, Will," Nico said. "We can't stop him." Sola stared at him in disbelief, but Nico remembered his father's words in the Chapel of Bones. Some deaths cannot be prevented. Octavian's eyes gleamed.
"That's right, son of Pluto. You are helpless to stop me. It is my destiny. Kahale, stand guard."
"As you wish."
Michael moved in front of the machine, interposing himself between Octavian and the two Greek demigods.
"Centurion, do what you must."
Octavian turned to release the catch.
"A good friend to the last."
Nico almost lost his nerve. If the Onager really did fire true, if it scored a hit on Festus the dragon, Nico allowed his friends to be hurt or killed. But he stayed where he was. For once, he decided to trust the wisdom of his father. Some deaths should not be prevented.
"Goodbye, Gaia!" Octavian yelled. "Goodbye, Jason Grace the traitor!"
Octavian cut the release wire with his ogre's knife, and he disappeared. The catapult arms sprang forward faster than Nico's eyes could follow, launching Octavian along with the ammunition. The ogre's scream faded until he was simply part of the fiery comet soaring skyward.
"Goodbye, Octavian,"
Michael Kahale said. He glared at Will and Nico one last time as if daring them to speak. Then he turned his back and trudged away. Nico could have lived with Octavian's end. He might have even said, "Good riddance." But his heart sank as the comet kept gaining altitude. It disappeared into the storm clouds, and the sky exploded in a dome of fire.
And that's the end of chapter 54. And just like that, we have now seen the end of Octavian.
This seems like one of those endings that you would see in those cartoons shows where they had launched into the air and then they become a twinkle in the sky. It kind of sounds like that at the moment, where Octavian just launched into the sky and is now a part of the sky, never to be seen again. Now, it doesn't seem like we will be done with Octavian just yet. I don't think that he's going to get quite the ending that we think where he's going to get. So I'm curious to see whether he'll come back in the future chapters of this book and see what he does. But until then, we'll be followed by a short break and read chapter 54 soon after. So, see you after the break.